Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham, embracing what's fun with Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Get a very different Spotlight Connecticut ahead for this afternoon, as I want to focus on what it was like being in Stamford all week long for the Michelle Turconis trial and its outcome. I will tell you, it was an emotional time. It really was. It was raw emotion. It was boring at times, too, because you're waiting for something to happen. You're waiting for some kind of excitement. You're waiting for a verdict, and it just isn't coming. And, you know, you find things to do, you find people to talk to, but what you're waiting for to happen, you don't know when it's going to happen. You absolutely do not. And you're waiting basically on pins and needles. That's what I said a few times in my live reports and in conversation with other people, people who were saying, Morgan, is anything going on? The question I was asked, I was actually asked a number of questions this past week, but the one that I was asked most, do you know when it's going to happen? Do you know when there's going to be a verdict? No, I don't know anything about that. I don't know any more than anybody asking me. And so I was there as an observer waiting for that moment, but it really was. It was tense. It was moving. It was sad. All kinds of emotions all in one, felt every single day this week, not to mention the last 7 weeks, making this one of Connecticut's longest trials in recent history. That's for sure. You know, if you go on Google and you type in how long does a trial last, it tells you an average of 3 to 4 days. This wasn't even 3 to 4 weeks. It was longer than that. Started on January 11th. And make no mistake, this process is far from over. This has the potential to be, in a way, like the Michael Skakel case, just ongoing for years and years and years. I do want to mention, as I think about how things played out this week, and as I think about how people talked about it in the media, it's important to note that WTIC, News Talk 1080, was the only radio station there. Now, there was plenty of showing for television. There was plenty. If you drove by Stamford Superior Court on Hoyt Street in downtown Stamford, you would have seen nothing but television crews. And if you didn't know what was going on, you were probably wondering to yourself, what's happening here? Why are all the TV cameras here? They were set up at the street. They were set up on sidewalks. They were set up outside of Stamford Superior Court. There were multiple cars per station parked on the street. It was really impressive to see that kind of a media turnout for this. But we were it for radio. There were print reporters, too, for several of the area papers. But we were it for radio. And WCBS, our friends there at WCBS News Radio 880, they were using me for ongoing analysis, not just on Friday when the verdict came down, but the last few weeks. And so whenever there was any kind of motion or any kind of change in the way that this trial was taking place, they would reach out to me, hey, Morgan, can you come on with us? And yes, I did. And I don't think that there's any problem with that. We are sister stations, and therefore we're using our resources accordingly and appropriately. So I was more than happy to do it. But shame on all the other radio stations in Connecticut that say that they do news, that they're news leaders and that they're news stations, when they weren't even there. We were it. And I bring this up because I want to just thank our leaders here at WTIC locally, Janine, Steve, and Stephanie. They believe in the product. It was definitely an effort to make it happen, to get me down there every day. There's a cost to it. There's the shifting of staff. There was a lot of moving parts that went into making that possible, and they could have very easily said, well, just cover it online. Just take the feed remotely. But that's not the same thing. It really isn't, because when you're there as part of the media, and there's a lot of intrigue concerning what's happening at the courthouse, especially with something that's difficult to explain, which is anything in legalese, you want to be there in person. You want to make connections. You want to meet people. You want to feel emotion. You want to understand what's happening. And being there in person, from everything as small as all rise and you stand up in the gallery, to the verdict being read, to legal technical words being explained, and getting to do an aside with somebody who is there watching with you. If you're confused, you can kind of, you know, like phone a friend. You can ask somebody next to you, hey, what's this all about? Can you explain this to me? Do you understand? Because this is my understanding. Do you get this correctly? And so when you're there in person, you're able to really get a deeper understanding of what's happening, which is so important for your audience, because you want to be able to talk to what's happening. You want to paint the picture. And on radio, I don't have the luxury of having a camera feed. It would be so easy to show a zoom up of Michelle Traconis crying as the guilty verdict came down. But I had to explain it, and I had to understand what I was seeing and bring that to our audiences on not just WTIC News Talk 1080, but our friends also at WCBS 880. Again, big thank you to our WTIC management for making this past week possible. It was a huge improvement in our understanding of what was going on in Michelle Traconis' case. Now, on to the big questions that people want me to answer concerning what happened, not just this past week, although that was probably the climax, the most exciting part, when it went to deliberations and the jury asked some questions, and then next thing you know, the final verdict came down. But people have been asking me for now 5 years about this case. And many times the same questions pop up over and over and over again. This past week was absolutely no different. The question that I've been hearing more recently, why do we care? Why is this newsworthy? Why is every television station in New York City, upstate New York, Connecticut, even a crew from Boston came down for this? Why are all the TV stations intrigued by this? Why is this making front page news on newspapers in Connecticut? Why is WTIC Radio sending Morgan Cunningham down to Stamford to cover it? Well, there are a number of reasons that make this case noteworthy. Now, somebody might say it's because it involves high society. It involves New Canaan and Avon and multi-million dollar mansions. And maybe some of that is intriguing. That personally has not appealed to me at all. I think that the simple answer to that question is that, where's Jennifer? That's what I would say to those people. There's no body. This is more than just a domestic violence case in that sense, that there's this mystery component to it that nobody has an answer to as to what happened to her body, where is it, and so on. Those kinds of questions pop up in everybody's mind when they think about the Michelle Traconis case. As far as domestic violence goes, this case really says something about red flags in relationships. When are protections needed in a relationship or a difficult divorce case? Are laws in Connecticut for domestic violence enough? Do those laws even matter if people are going to break them? So there are a lot of questions in that regard, but there are also questions about legal defense. Do you have to answer to a police interrogation the way that Michelle Traconis did? What does this say about police interrogations, not just in Connecticut, but in our country as a whole? So there are some of those aspects that make this story newsworthy beyond just the basic situation here, and certainly beyond the fact that it involves higher society, which is a term that I have heard in more recent times, just referring to the money aspect involving the case. There's much more to it. Another question that I've been asked is, obviously, what are the emotions like in this case? Because they have been running high now since Jennifer disappeared May 24th, 2019. And I would say that in the courtroom this past week, everybody was respectful, okay? And here's how I can attest to that personally, but also in talking about how other people, how I noticed other people being respectful. So I almost bumped elbows with Michelle Traconis. Now, it happened because on closing arguments day, which was Tuesday, there was a flood of people trying to get into that courtroom. There are two rows of seats reserved for the defense, so friends and family of Michelle Traconis. There are two rows of seats available for the prosecution, which would be the friends and family of Jennifer Farber-Dulos. Also, when you have such a moment like closing arguments and the verdict, a lot of lay people like to sit in and watch, as well as reporters like myself. And therefore, you have a lot of people crammed into one place. Now, what I will tell you is that this is nothing like a television show or a movie when you're watching a courtroom, because those rooms are really big and they can fit a lot of people and makes it look exciting and dramatic. Not so true in courtroom 4A in Stanford Superior Court. It was quite small. I don't have an idea on the exact shape of the room, but each row of seating fit about, depending on the size of everybody, about 10 people. And there were four or five rows on each side of the room. So it could really fit no more. I did a count on closing arguments day, which was the most packed. I did a count, and I counted 80 people in the gallery watching the trial. And people were turned away. They were sent over to courtroom 4B, which was playing a video feed of the happenings. So it was tight. It was packed. And when we were walking in and trying to figure out where we were supposed to go, I almost bumped elbows with Michelle herself. And then next thing you know, I see all of Jennifer's family also close in that moment to Michelle and her family and friends. And not one bad word was uttered. I did not see any dirty looks given in those kinds of moments. And so while maybe there were some other moments that I did not happen to observe that perhaps some would argue were not as respectful, in this past final week, I think that you saw everybody try their best to be composed and be as respectful as possible to the court proceedings as they were happening, so as not to jeopardize the legal process as it played out. So I would say that the first emotion that I saw, people being respectful of one another. Obviously, it was an upsetting time. It was a tense time. You saw that in people's faces. It didn't help when court was adjourned or when court went into recess and we did not have the answer that everybody wanted, which was the verdict. And then next thing you know, you see people pacing around in the hallways. And so there were definitely tense moments. And so I would say it was a weird combination of tense, respectful, stressful, and so on. I'm Morgan Cunningham at Spotlight Connecticut, and we are going to continue the rest of this hour analyzing just how things went this week with the Michelle Traconis trial as I saw it.
This is WTIC in Hartford.
Recognizing the best fans on Spotlight Connecticut.
Hi, I'm Kevin and Seymour, and I'm listening to Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham.
The other benefit of being in person at something as major as the Michelle Traconis deliberations and verdict, you get to meet people. Not just people involved with the case, but lay people. Average Joes, like me and you. People who are interested in one aspect or another of the case, because it's open to the public, and so anybody can go to Stanford Superior Court, anybody could go to room 4A. If there's a seat, then you can sit and you can watch and you can observe, which is what I did, which is what many people from Connecticut Press did. But I met a number of other people that don't have any stake in the outcome or the situation at hand who went there to watch. And one of them is Alan Friedman. Alan Friedman is a Stanford-based criminal defense attorney who's interested in the situation for the legal aspect. He has no stake, like I said, in this particular case, but he's curious about how things are going to work out legally in this situation. Being a defense attorney, obviously, he wants to see the approach that attorney John Schoenhorn takes and also how the state goes about its business. And so he was there watching this from time to time. His office is only like, what, two blocks away from Stanford Superior Court in downtown Stanford? So he would walk over when he had time, and he would go watch it, or he would follow it virtually. And I'm excited to say that I met him outside of the courthouse one afternoon, and we got talking about the case and his analysis of it. And we're going to have him on next half hour to talk about the case as he witnessed it and also go into further detail about how it impacts Connecticut and its residents going forward, because there is a level of impact that we should analyze here. Now, going back to those questions that people, you know what? I found another word. People asking me, how are the emotions? I found another word, awkward. During the commercial break, the word awkward came to mind because there I am in the gallery watching people in tears for feelings that I could never understand myself. I'm watching them. I'm understanding them in a sense that I can explain it on the radio, but I don't understand it because I've never been charged with conspiracy to commit murder. I've never lost a family member to an act of domestic violence before. I don't know how any of that may possibly feel. And so you're sitting there observing their reaction and seeing them leave the courthouse and go to the parking garage in that kind of anguish. And you feel a little awkward in watching it. So I'd add that word to people asking me, what were the emotions like and how did people feel? That's definitely a word that comes to mind. The waiting, as I had said, was tense, but here's how it worked. There are courtrooms, and outside of each courtroom, there are conference rooms where perhaps an attorney may meet with a client one-on-one, and it's an area where you can have a confidential and private conversation without worry that you're going to be intruded on. If you see one of those rooms occupied, if you're not supposed to be in there, you can't be in there. And there are marshals that are watching this. And so you would see the friends and family of Jennifer Farber-Dulos go into take up two conference rooms. And then you would see the Michelle Tricotas family and supporters go into the other two conference rooms. And that's where they would stay for the most part, except for when they needed to stretch and walk around a little bit. That's where they would actually stay while awaiting a verdict or while in recess for whatever reason. So they would just sit in the conference room and try to talk. I had a conversation with a number of people from both sides who, when they left the conference room to get a snack or a water, you know, you'd bump into them and you'd ask them what was on their mind and how they were feeling. And basically they were all nervous and they were all worried for one reason or another and for different reasons on each side. But then they would get talking to you about something as simple as the weather. They're people too, and they're looking to kill some time while they're awaiting that crucial verdict. And so I had the opportunity to see that waiting process that took about 3 days play out, and it largely involved I hate to say it, time killing. Another question that I've received a lot after following this trial for 7 weeks, after following this case for nearly 5 years, and after being there this week, one question that I get a lot is, the jury really unbiased? Now, how am I supposed to know? Because I'm not on the jury. I don't know what's in the minds of those people. I'm also not an attorney, so I'm not the ones. I'm not the people involved in questioning potential jurors, but here's something interesting that I noticed, and it happened as I walked to the parking garage. I was going to my car to leave for the day, and you see that there's a large press pool outside of Stanford Superior Court, and there's a court marshal there at the parking garage, and somebody's walking into the garage. Now, I would imagine, and I would assume that this person is from Connecticut, most likely. Okay, that's not entirely possible, but if they're from even just New York City, this is a case that has made word in New York City, but I'm assuming that they're from the region. They went up to the marshal and said, "What's with all of the press outside?" And I was walking slow enough, intentionally, so as to eavesdrop and hear a little bit because I was taken aback. I figured that everybody and anybody that went to the courthouse would know what was going on. And the marshal just basically explained it's this particular case and yada, yada, yada. Well, this person really didn't seem to have any kind of clue or grasp as to what it was all about or what happened. And so I would imagine that, yes, there's a lot of media coverage of this trial, but because there are so many media options today, maybe there are people out there, as unlikely as you might think it is, maybe there are people out there that really don't know what's going on. Perhaps they do live under a rock. So was that jury unbiased? Did those people really not know about the case before they were selected? If they didn't, did they not go home and watch television news? You would assume so. You would hope so. Certainly in a perfect world, I guess there's no way to know. So I guess that's how I would answer that question. That is how I answered it, actually. I was asked a few times, just based on my own observations and that stranger talking with the marshal, not knowing exactly what was going on. We'll continue.
Spotlight Connecticut.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again, but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Ah, DSW, Earth Place of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices. We'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With Morgan Cunningham.
But after having been in Stamford all week and after following the Michelle Tricotas trial the last 7 weeks, we couldn't possibly avoid it. And somebody who I met outside of Stamford Superior Court is an attorney, a criminal defense attorney, who has been following this case since day one, not always in court, sometimes following it online on the stream, but his office is not too far away, being in Stamford from Superior Court. My guest is Alan Friedman. Welcome to the program, Alan. Thanks for coming on.
Well, it's sure a pleasure to be with you today.
And I got to say, you have the coolest business cards. They're solid plastic. That's amazing.
Well, I try to keep it memorable so that if someone has it, they'll remember me.
But it's not a plastic debit card or a credit card, so I got no money out of it, but it still is a pretty cool card. I like it. Thanks for being here, Alan.
Thank you.
Now, the very first time that we met and we talked, we had addressed one aspect of this entire trial, which was a very key part of the prosecution's case against Michelle Trakotas, and that is the police interviews that she gave to investigators. And outside of the courthouse yesterday, Alan, I want to play for you 1 minute of audio of Michelle Trakotas' defense attorney reacting to those interviews. This was kind of the first time that we saw him talk about what was significantly wrong or what might have thrown this case. Take a listen, Alan.
People, in my view, should never sit down with the police for interrogation. They should never do it, because people forget it's not just things that are bad that can be used against you, it's anything can be used against you. And that's what I feel was done here. I have no insight as to why any lawyer, without either an immunity agreement or a proffer agreement, would walk their client into a police interrogation without knowing very much about the offense. Now, that's me. So you might want to ask the lawyer that did that. At least we know one other lawyer that, for Mr. Gumieni, got an immunity agreement in order to have his client cooperate. That is the strategy that would have been the more appropriate, in my view, again, reasonable action for a lawyer to take.
Michelle Trakotas' defense attorney, John Schoenhorn, reacting to those police interviews that he thinks really played a key role in the outcome of the trial this past week. I'm talking with Alan Friedman. What's your understanding of what happened there? What's your take?
Well, I've been doing this for 32 years. I get calls almost on a weekly basis from individuals, and they tell me the police have contacted them. They're under investigation. It's a natural reaction when you're facing trouble. The instinctive thing to do is to talk your way out of it. And police can be very coercive, by the way, in telling people a lot of things. If you listen to the interview tapes, there was a lot of coercion going on. According to the Supreme Court, the police are allowed to use deception and even lies in interrogations to elicit confessions. For example, if the police have you and you agree to be questioned, they could say to you, well, your co-defendant already gave us the whole story, so why don't you come clean while you still have a chance, you know, something like that. I think they said something to her like, you know, do you like your children? You know, you don't want to get deported, do you? Stuff like that. You know, it's a natural thing, but in my policy, in my practice, I never, ever, ever, ever allow somebody to be interviewed by police for this reason. And it's shocking. Attorney Bowman was the attorney that represented her at the time. I don't know what he was thinking to bring her in there three times, because that's basically what sealed the case against her. In my opinion, if they didn't have those three interviews, they wouldn't have had a case. So it was her own words that basically put her in jail.
We heard the term immunity deal, proffer agreement, and we saw it play out with Pavel Gumieni, who was an associate and employee of Fotis Doulos, who ended up testifying against Michelle. Would that have been any kind of an alternate solution?
No, it wouldn't work, because she's the target of the investigation. So they're not going to give her immunity. Maybe if Fotis Doulos was still alive, that might have been a possibility. If he was going to trial, maybe she could have thought about doing immunity to save herself. But at the end of the day, you know, she was the principal target of the investigation, so obviously they're not going to give her immunity.
What does the average layperson who's listening to our conversation now need to know about police interviews of any kind if they find themselves in that kind of a situation where they're being interrogated?
Well, you know, under the Fifth Amendment, you have the right to remain silent, even beyond interrogations where they bring you into the police station. If they just pull you over, you know, the best policy is to always say, you know, to the police officer, am I being detained or am I free to go? If the officer says you're free to go, then just go. Leave and go home. You don't have to say anything else. That's it. If the officer says, no, you're being detained, then you say, I want a lawyer. I don't want to say anything. It's really unconscionable and shocking that this woman hired a lawyer, and the lawyer brought her in there three times. It's not good. It's not a good practice. And I don't do that. And I don't ever try to bring anyone in, even though, although sometimes someone may have a very convincing story, I never allow my clients to give interviews to police, because it's just for this reason that if you go to trial, the first time the jury should hear from an accused is at the time of trial.
During the trial, and I'm speaking with Stanford-based criminal defense attorney who followed this case, Alan F. Friedman. You can learn more about him, alanffriedmanlaw.com, by the way. You were following this case, and take out those police interviews that they played back with Michelle and look at all of the other evidence. What did you see playing out in the state's case against Michelle?
Well, obviously, you know, she was in the truck in Hartford when the plastic bags were being discarded, one of which contained, a bra, a bloody bra, the victim. The license plate that was discarded in the sewer, those are a whole bunch of steps that would go towards the tampering with evidence and hindering prosecution charges. Maybe just based upon her presence and the so-called alibi sheets, perhaps they could have got her on those, but I don't think they could have ever got her on a conspiracy to commit first-degree murder without her statements.
So that's what you think did it to seal the deal on getting the all of those six counts as guilty?
Yes, and the defense lawyer was, as you played his comments, he was well aware that those interviews were a significant problem in the case, because he most of the defense in the case was experts who were trying to show deficiencies in memory under stress, and also experts trying to show language deficiencies.
Was there anything else that he could have done in the defense? Because you look at how the state's case lasted weeks, 5 to 6 weeks. His lasted for 3 days. And you being a criminal defense attorney, what would your approach have been? Would it have been similar? Would it have been different?
I think he did a great job. I think he really did an amazing job. He's a very, very good lawyer. I wouldn't second guess what he did. I mean, I just think that when he took over the case, he basically... because these confessions were already made, his principal strategy to try to win the case was to suppress those statements. And I believe there were motions filed to suppress those statements under various theories.
Yes.
But once that failed, then basically the odds of a conviction went way up. If he had been more successful at suppressing some of the evidence, then it might have been more effective. The problem with the interview tapes were that she had a lawyer there with her present. You know, when someone reads you your Miranda rights, Miranda is a case that involves interrogations under custody. She wasn't even being detained or held. She voluntarily came in. So not so sure that would be required. But, of course, she signed off on all those waivers, and she had a lawyer present. So because she had a lawyer present with her, it makes it kind of a high bar to claim that she wasn't effectively advised or didn't understand what was going on because she had a lawyer there each time.
He's planning to make the arguments that I'm talking about, her current defense attorney, John Schoenhorn, that this trial was not fair, that it should be redone, that it should be basically a new trial in the lower court. Do you think that that has any chance of happening?
I'm not sure what his theories are going to be. I know that there was some issues about the venue. There's other issues. There's a lot of motions and rights that he's preserved for appeal. It's really hard to predict. Generally, in my experience, once somebody's been convicted, it's kind of a difficult road to undo the conviction in the appellate process. But we'll have to see what his appeals are and what the issues that he decides to try to appeal on. You know, I've identified some of them from what I've heard. Probably most of those suppression motions and all the change of venue motion, the issue being whether, you know, since most of the events took place in Hartford, whether the trial should have been in Hartford.
Do you think that there's any chance that... Oh, well, let me ask you this better question. Why wasn't that approved?
It's up to the judge. At the end of the day, a lot of the action, a lot of the facts took place in the Stanford-Norwalk Judicial District, which includes New Canaan. So, yes, some of the events took place in Hartford, but the murder itself, alleged murder,
took place down in that district.
It seems pretty obvious that something happened to that woman. Even the defense attorney for Traconis admitted as such. So that happened down in New Canaan. What was interesting to me about the case was when I was listening to the defense counsel at the end of the case, he said the state never even offered an offer for her to plead guilty to something to resolve the case. They just wanted to take the case to trial from the beginning, which is very unusual.
Could that have been a misstep?
No, I don't think it was. Obviously, it was a great step by the state because they had confidence in their case. And for whatever reason, they wanted to prosecute it. But generally, you know, in our criminal justice system, 99% of cases are plea bargains. So there's a plea agreement reached. There's an offer and a plea agreement.
I'm talking on Spotlight Connecticut this afternoon with criminal defense attorney Alan Friedman of Stamford. We're just basically having a conversation breaking down what happened this past week and Michelle Tricotas being found guilty on all counts, the basic charges, hindering prosecution, evidence tampering, and the biggest of those of the three, murder conspiracy. I want to draw attention to the name Kent Mawhinney. He's a co-defendant in the case. He's facing a murder conspiracy charge. Not a whole lot is known publicly about the state's case against him, although today his attorney did release a statement basically saying that the Jennifer situation is a tragedy, but that his client was not involved. So are you following this at all? And what's your understanding of how Michelle Tricotas is guilty on all counts verdict might impact Kent Mawhinney's case?
I don't think it'll have any effect on his case. Presumably any jury that's going to hear his case is going to remain impartial and follow the evidence that's presented in his case. So I wouldn't think that jurors, you know, hopefully would not follow the media and say, well, Michelle Tricotas is guilty, so he has to be guilty too. Obviously, the facts in his case are very different. From what's been reported in the media, it seems that he was a member of a hunting and fishing club, a hunting club somewhere in upstate Connecticut, and there was a grave that was dug.
Granby. That's right. It was in Granby.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so obviously that's an interesting fact. It's going to be interesting to see how that case plays out.
Basically, Alan, I don't think that we're done hearing about what happened in this case at all with Michelle Tricotas, or certainly not Kent Mowinney. His trial hasn't even started. You know, the name Michael Skakel comes to mind. That happened in 1975, and his name in that case is still coming up almost 50 years later. Is this going to be the next case in Connecticut that we're going to be hearing about for years and years to come?
I don't know. That's hard to say. You know, the Skakel case was a very different kind of case. It involved, you know, a situation where he was a juvenile when the offense was committed. He was tried much later on as an adult, many years later. And the evidence in that case was a little bit, you know, more circumstantial. This case was strictly circumstantial evidence, except for the videos and the statements that she made. But that case, yeah, ultimately, as you may know, that case was the verdict was vacated based upon ineffective assistance of counsel, which is very unusual. Clearly, in this case, I don't think that's going to work for Michelle Tricotas, because her attorney did an amazing job.
Well, Alan, I hate to do it. We have to take our break, and actually we'll be up on the end of our show. So I want to thank you for coming on, and we'll have you back as needed to do further analysis, okay?
Okay, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. Have a wonderful day.
You too, Alan Friedman. You can learn more about him, alanffriedmanlaw.com. We'll wrap up in just a moment on WTIC.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. we host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.